C1G.
Number 15B.
So the first day you can hear that law where life says, let there be light, let there be. Can you see the impulsion of it? Then it was said, and God divided the light from the darkness. So he made that light factual, so that it is only light there, and nothing mixed up with darkness. That's the truth. And love, the fulfilled, says, and God called the light day, an eternal light, an everlasting light, a light that will never be anything but light. That is the meaning of day, the irradiance of life. Or we can go to the second day of creation. There again we hear the same law at work, because first it says at the point of life, let there be a firmament, again the creative, then the factual of truth, and God made the firmament, it became actual and factual, real. And finally, love, the fulfilled, says, and God called the firmament heaven. In heaven there is no more anything evil. Therefore, the separation process has come to a complete fulfillment. So again you have, let there be a firmament. God made the firmament, and that firmament was called heaven, the fulfilled sense. If we take the third day of creation, again we have that impelling life which says, let the dry land appear. Then the factual, that that dry land, the earth, brought forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind, whose seed is in itself. See? It became now a fact that could no more be wiped out, because it has the seed within itself. Therefore, it will endure. So finally, the fulfilled sense was that that the earth brought forth grass and herb and the tree yielding fruit. So it was fulfilled. So first again, the act of impulsion, let there be the dry land appear. Then the factual, that dry land, the earth, was constantly bringing forth its own identity so that it never could disappear. And then the fulfilled sense, that it actually did yield fruit. Or we come to the fourth day, where life says, let there be lights. See, we have now the lights, but still, let there be lights. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, to give light upon the earth. Here again, the commandment of life. Then the factuality of truth, God made two great lights to rule the day and the night. And finally, the whole thing was fulfilled. Namely, God set them in the firmament, became a final statement of the heaven to rule. Actually, I have only given an abbreviated version of the Bible, just take out the main points, because there would not be room enough to type out everything. And it's perhaps even so much clearer, because it brings out the main tone. So again, and in principle, can you hear spiritual here, where life, truth, and love say to principle, let there be a principle, and he made that principle, truth, and as love, he would say, and that principle does rule. It's fulfilled. Principle is fulfilled when the principle operates. Or we have the fifth day, Again, life says, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature and that has life and fowl. Again, the creative command. And now if you hear the truth, and God created great whales and every living creature that moves and every winged fowl, he made it, it became factual. And finally we have the fulfilled sense, and God said, be fruitful and multiply. A fulfilled sense of the living activity. So first, in that fifth day you have life which impels life, then truth which makes it actual, that life, and finally love says, yes, that life lives because it multiplies and multiplies and multiplies and is fruitful and is abundant. Let's take the sixth day of creation. Again, first, we have a sense of life, namely, let the earth bring forth the living creature, cattle, creeping things, beasts of the earth. Then we get the factual, we get the factuality, man as the idea of truth. Let us make man now in what? And we get the factuality, in our image, after our likeness, and God created man in his own image. So we get the facts of that creation. And finally, the tone of love, rounding it up, says, and God said, be fruitful and multiply. You see, it's similar to the above sense of the fifth day. But, and have dominion. So that it gives a fulfilled sense of the sixth day that man has dominion. So it is not only asking him to have dominion, but he has dominion, and therefore gives the fulfilled sense. In the seventh day, interestingly enough, we have that law of life, truth, and love twice. First in the tone of love as truth, you see it there, where God said, and God made the heavens, then the facts of it, the earth. The moment heaven becomes factual, we have the earth, it becomes right down to earth where it is tangible. And all the hosts of them were finished. You get the sense of love, of finished, the finality of it. And in the tone of love as love, you have it again. On the seventh day, God ended. You see, that's now no more the impulsion of life. It is now it now must come somehow to the beingness of life, where we have the link between the 7 days of creation and then the eighth day. So on the seventh day, God ended. That's another impulsion, says, that's enough. His work which he had made, again, it's retrospectively seen that that was the true form about everything, and he rested from all his work. You have again a sense of love. But as you see, in the tone of the seventh day, this law of life, truth and love gets a higher tone, more a tone of the fulfilled sense. It's no more so much a creative sense, because on the seventh day we have seen the creative sense ends and the being sense of things begins to appear. Yes. Well, that is the law that we can see as that which triggers off, so to say, the every creative sense. Yeah. Now, This was the biblical illustration. In the same way, we could illustrate it through the life of Jesus in Matthew. Matthew built up that whole his whole story according to the pattern of the law of interdependence in the world. And if you read and study, for instance, John Dolly's verbatim report on the Oxford Summer School, 1949, you will find there a great enlargement and illustration and exemplification of that law. He wrote the whole half of the book of the first volume is all about Matthew and shows forth that law in Jesus' life. But if that law was the creative law of the days of creation, and if that same law was the law operating in Jesus' life, then the same law is operating now in every idea. Therefore, every new idea, what is a new idea? It's again the sense of creation. Every new idea comes from where? Does it come from our thinking, because we think about it, because we somehow construe a new idea? From where does a new idea come from? Now, from where does a new idea come? And we all are actually always interested in that. We like the newness of life. Each one of us. We all are faced with a problem where we should have a right idea, a new idea, an exalted idea, an idea that solves the problem, a solving idea. From where would we get them? We can't figure out a new idea. We can't figure out a solution for a problem by somehow figuring out an idea that would help the problem. It must be the birth from a law. Therefore, we can take that law right into ourselves. And whenever we have to see, say, a newness of an idea, we can say, well, I know a law in absolute Christian Science that brings about the world in Christian Science. And so instead of trying to figure out what the new idea is, I just go back to that law of interdependence and just sit back and say, that new idea is anyway already established in being. There is no new idea that is not already there. And when I do that, my thought is on the level of divine science, where I put the idea back into God and see the idea already is co-existent and co-eternal with God. It is not something that has to be created. It's only something that has to be revealed. It is not known to me. Therefore, I must see the law that brings that idea to my consciousness. So, on the level of divine science, the Word of God says every idea exists already in being. Then I can translate the Word in divine science to the point of the Word in absolute Christian Science and can see that that one being in divine science is constantly using the law of life, truth and love to bring forth this specific idea. Because on the absolute Christian Science level, we have the relationship of principle to a specific idea. How does that one being bring forth the new ideas, the specific idea? Well, it brings it forth through the impelling power of life, the newness of life, the spontaneity of life, the urge of life that says, I am the truth about everything. I'm factual. and I know the exact idea, that idea which will be solving, which is perfect, and therefore will be the answer to a situation. I, life, truth, and love, impel what? Impel the coming forth of a new idea in human consciousness. And so has to translate it to the level of Christian Science, to the level of where it comes to human consciousness, and how does it come to human consciousness. So we can see that life, truth, and love impel mind to reveal itself, to manifest itself. Can you see? So I begin to see not mind manifests itself, it is life, truth, and love impelling the mind to reveal itself. How does life impel mind? It impels mind to manifest itself. Truth says to that mind, I impel mind to reveal itself as a true idea so that it's not hidden. And love says to that mind, I impel mind to bring out the saving, solving idea. Can you see? So I first establish that not I have to bring forth an idea, and the right idea, and the saving idea. Can you hear life, truth, and love? My word, you have to. So I would start that way. Then I would see the second day, and I would see that life, truth, and love is as spirit impelling really the order of ideas, the ordering of idea, the unfoldment of the idea. How does life, truth, and love use spirit for the unfoldment of the idea? Life would say, well, I bring forth the pure idea that is going to purify. And truth says to that spirit, I am going to unfold that idea which is absolutely separate from any mingling and from any false conception. And love says, and I impel the unfoldment of the idea, of the order of idea, so that there is no opposition to it, so that it unfolds in an ordered way, in peace and in rest, and without any struggle, and without any hostility, without any enemy, without any accuser, without any opposition. Can you hear the tone of love behind it? So I would see that not I have to unfold the idea. Then I go back to the law of life, truth, and love, impelling really the identification of the idea through soul. I see not I have to identify the idea rightly and name it rightly and define it rightly. It will be identified to me. It will be named to me. I will hear it. But how does that operate? I would say, well, behind soul is always the impelling law of life, truth, and love, and that life will impel the idea to identify itself. But how? As truth, it will say, because truth is the fact and not fable, therefore it will identify itself as a factual identity and not as a counterfeit, so that I'm not sidetracked. So I have the factual identification, not the distorted and deflected identification, not the counterfeit. And love will say to that identification, will say, I identify the true idea through soul so that the true identity will be seen in all its beauty and glory and in its whole beauty and glory, really. That impresses me. Then I say, but here I can't stop. That idea doesn't work yet. So I feel there is a law of life, truth and love, impelling principle to operate, to govern. So I go right back and say, not I have to see how the true idea is now going to operate, how it is going to manage everything. I keep my hands out of it. And therefore, I see that the law of the impelling life impels principle to be the authority of that problem, so that it acts as a great power, spiritual power, as an authority. And truth will say to that authority is of nature of truth, is irrepressible. It is irresistible. No error can resist it. And somehow, as love, I would say that this power that is at work to demonstrate itself can in no way be opposed, condemned, misinterpreted, misunderstood, so that there is a way of a complete solution, and the way is free for that solution. Still, at that point I see that I only see that principle is operating that idea. I still can go further and see, but I must see really the living sense of that idea. And so I feel I can't do anything, I can't make an idea to be alive and to do its job, an idea to move and do what it has to do. But I can go back and say, but that idea is impelled by life, truth and love. So life, truth and love, so to say, impel the mutation, impels the spontaneity of the idea. How? I see that life first says, I am spontaneity, let there be spontaneity, let there be no time sense, let there be split-second creative ability. And in that split-second creative ability, truth will say, that brings forth really the true solution. And love will say to that mutation or to that spontaneity, I mutate you. I bring the solution by mutating you onto a higher plane, onto an exalted state of things. And so the fowls fly above the earth into the open firmament. So can you see, at that point of life, I really feel I must let myself be impelled by life to accept what life impels in a spontaneous way. That truth says, I give you a new form for it, perhaps you have to undergo a mutation. And love will say, and that brings you to another level of existence, to a higher view of existence, to a higher view of how to tackle things. Then I feel perhaps, yes, and is that going to work? Is that of the nature of truth? And so I see, oh yes, because life, truth and love impel the consciousness of truth. They are that which form my new consciousness. So life, truth and love says, I do not let go until you accept a new consciousness. I impel on you that you have a new consciousness. And truth says, and when I impel you to have a true consciousness, I know that it will be a divine consciousness and not a mortal consciousness. It will be a higher consciousness. It will be the truth consciousness. And love says to that consciousness, and that consciousness includes all truths. There is nothing unknown in that consciousness. And so more and more you feel, can you see how that apparent problem that was there at the beginning just begins to disappear, because life, truth and love impels a consciousness that does not know anymore any evil. And that brings me naturally to the point of love, the seventh day, where I feel it is actually life, truth, and love impelling the perfection of being or impelling the plan of being, because I can see that life is that drive in being that says, I am not stopping, I am not halting, I am not giving up until I have impelled you to accept really perfection. I don't hold on halfway. My impulsion goes on and on until and force you to accept perfection. And truth says, and when I force you to accept perfection, then you know what you know, that you know what is perfect. And love says to that perfection, then you are in heaven. Then you are another creature. Then you are absolutely free from the problem, from the earth, and nothing bothers you again. You get really a sense of peace and rest. Well, that's one way that I've now just given out, what you say, from SCUF, huh? Yeah. But that is a law, as you see, that you can entertain and entertain within you. And every time you go through it, it is new. It is adapted to a situation. Not every situation brings forth the same argument. And according to the argument, you begin to feel that life, truth, and love operate in each synonymous term in a different way, but always as impelling the idea to come forth, as truth giving to that new idea true form, a true solution, and love giving to that solution the benediction, the blessing, and the glory. Okay? Tomorrow we start with the second record of creation.